Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Portals, Energetic Doorways to Mystical Experiences Between Worlds, by Freddie Silver, narrated by Paul Fox. Disclaimer: the information provided in this book is designed to provide helpful information on the subjects discussed. This book is not meant to be used, nor should it be used, to diagnose or treat any medical condition. The author and publisher are not responsible for any specific health needs that may require medical supervision and are not liable for any damages or negative consequences from any treatment, action, application, or preparation to any person reading or following the information in this book. References are provided for information purposes only and do not constitute endorsement of any individuals, websites, or other sources. In the event you use any of the information in this book for yourself, the author and the publisher assume no responsibility for your actions. Part 1. Understanding Portals. Once contact with the transcendent is lost, existence in the world ceases to be possible. Mircea Eliade. A portal defined. It began innocently enough, as most magic does, over 3 decades ago, 8 o'clock at night. Light drizzle falling, coating the ground like a gossamer of pearl. Typical weather on any given day in this corner of the planet. The neophyte was instructed to find a stone, sit, be still, and connect with the spirit of place. He thought it an odd request. How do I connect with a spirit of place? Do I pray? I thought religion had nothing to do with this type of work. Among the circle of upright megaliths, one appeared to be beckoning him. Aren't stones supposed to be hard and lifeless objects? Am I imagining things? But he did as instructed, sat on the damp grass, his back pressed to cold bluestone, and closed his eyes. The visions rushed in. A tall figure presented itself, human-like, but not quite human, luminous yet paradoxically physical, 2 large, wing-like appendages wrapped around his back. With one arm extended, he handed the neophyte a sword sheathed in bluish flames. Some kind of non-verbal communication was exchanged. Precisely what it meant was not immediately clear. A sane mortal would have had the common sense to walk away by now. But the experience felt peaceful, even loving. He took a breath and immersed himself in this new, yet uncertain experience. There's nothing like entering uncharted territory to shape one's character. Then came a voice from above, quietly spoken. In your own time, make your way over to the hut for a cup of tea. One of the night watchmen had walked across the stone circle to remind the neophyte that private time had reached its conclusion. Time to depart, or return, depending on one's point of view. What? Has it been 2 hours? I couldn't have closed my eyes for more than a few minutes. What just happened? The neophyte stood up, groggy and uncertain, as though walking on shifting sand, and wandered over to the teacher. So, how was it for you? She said. The neophyte calmly described his experience in vivid detail. It was unlike a dream, or vision, or hallucination. It seemed more like a meeting between 2 interpenetrating worlds where, for a few minutes, or 2 hours, 2 separate entities standing on opposite continents separated by time and space met on common ground. No. None of this was chemically induced. He hadn't taken drugs. The teacher was aghast. You received a flaming sword on your first visit here. Oh dear, you've got your work cut out for you, young man. Indeed, from that moment forward, life would cease to be anything but dull. His sense of awareness expanded to accommodate a parallel reality, awakening a nascent memory that would gradually shape his life, his work, his spiritual outlook, even his perception of the universe as it is, rather than how it is perceived. All of this and more would reveal itself at his pace of development. Has it really been 3 decades? I know it has. I remember it as vividly as this morning, because that neophyte was myself, and the account was my first conscious interaction with a portal, Stonehenge no less. If I am to write about portals, I do so from personal experience, and because I had no idea what they were, or that they even existed, or for that matter, that anything written from this point forward was even possible. I wouldn't change a single word or swap any experience for a wad of cash, because it has led me to where I am today, a teacher. The word portal is thrown around today as casually as a cushion. Social media in particular is awash with posts by people believing they entered a portal just because sunlight caused a lens flare on the camera of their smartphone, or they felt an unnerving presence while viewing a property, or a tourist map marked the location of local portals that a fleet of jeeps gladly took you to once you forked over a generous sum of money. It's not that straightforward. There are parameters that define a portal and how it shapes the experience of the individual with whom it interacts, while the experience itself is defined by what the individual is searching for, consciously or otherwise. There are places on the land where the laws of physics, as we understand them, behave very differently. To those with their antenna extended, they feel like hotspots where the veil between worlds is thinner and the perception of overlapping realities is both apparent and immediate. How is this possible? The human body is really nothing more than a conglomerate of atoms bound together by the laws of electricity, magnetism, and gravity. Not a very romantic image, I agree. Yet it is the essence of what we are, a product of millions of pulsing and whirling pools of energy bound to each other, giving the illusion of one distinct organism. It is calculated that if all the air were expelled from a body, the entire mass of what constitutes it would occupy no more than a teaspoon. A portal is governed by the same natural forces, invisible to the naked eye, yet utterly real in its own level of reality, much like a radio station yet to be discovered further down the dial. A simple analogy is to compare a portal to a plank of wood. Sliding your hand along the fine, orderly grain, every so often it is interrupted by a knot where the living wood has grown around an obstruction. If it were visible to the naked eye, that's what a portal on the landscape would look like. An interruption, a vortex swirling in the smooth current of a river. When a person's spatial awareness is duly engaged and mindful of its surroundings, these miniature universes become tangible and apparent. The more one interacts with this energy, the more it becomes visible in the mind's eye. And as one acclimates to this new reality, the experience gradually becomes second nature, an extension of the self, like learning to drive a car. Eventually, engaging with multiple places of power extends the body's electrical circuitry to the point where you become capable of observing energy with the naked eye. I've met people who can see the energy in colour. One friend, an accomplished sound healer, can even hear the sound a portal generates. Since the portal is an entry point of energy, emanating from other realities, it becomes a stage for every player that ever existed, exists, or is yet to exist, to cohabit a shared environment, be it for an instant or a lifetime. Ancient traditions have much to say on the matter. They describe portals as resident places of the spirits, what scholars misinterpret as gods, although they're not far off the mark, since the traditional understanding of a god is a force of nature. The energy field, or soul, encompassing and inhabiting a drop of water, a blade of grass, a rock, an animal, or a person. To our predecessors, and today's living shamans, portals assist the enlightenment of the individual by providing a more direct conduit to an astral reference library, or the means to communicate with other entities, be they alive or long since dissolved. And when used as places of power, portals are capable of storing information and directing it to where it needs to be applied. Succinctly expressed, a portal is a supernatural opening in space and time, connecting thoughts, dreams, and potentially objects and people with myriad points in the universe, even multiple levels of reality. A portal is a contact station with the miraculous, an island of stability amid a landscape of change. Portals vary in size, from the obscenely large, the Great Pyramid of Giza, to the very compact, such as the one in my apartment, which is 3 feet in diameter, and any dog entering the room will naturally gravitate toward it, as though working a room to connect with a like-minded accomplice. And despite their special locations throughout the landscape, portals are not as rare as one might think. Nor are they always to be found among bucolic scenery or in the holiest room of an ancient temple. When I first moved to Portland, Maine, I went on a walkabout in this compact city to find its most active portals, to help myself acclimate with the spirit of place. I was able to locate 5 hotspots, all of them in parks, lawns, or places that had yet to succumb to development. An astonishing feat, given the speed of urbanization, except the one inside my apartment. My building appears to have been erected on an ancient Abenaki sacred site, and it attracts all kinds of spiritual people. A 5th site is partially visible amid the Bay of Islands at extreme low tide, thanks to an ocean on the rise. Together, they form a distinct shape, a mirror of the constellation Delphinus as it appeared above New England around 3000 BC. The city is now casually referred to as Portal Land. So where are these portals? How do we find them? How did our predecessors work with them? How do they relate to ancient temples, sacred sites, and other places of power? What practical benefit can they offer in this modern, disconnected century? That's what this adventure is all about. Portals among the ancients. Being intimately connected to the ways and rhythms of nature, our distant cousins were more attuned to the world around them, particularly its subtle landscape. Sensing and working with portals was a habit as common to them as shopping for a tin of baked beans is to us. Their practical and spiritual survival depended on it. When working with something to that degree of intimacy, the elements become intertwined, like vines, to the point where discernment between what is physical and what is something else becomes irrelevant. Ancient Egyptians even coined a phrase for it: as above, so below. The relationship formed the cornerstone of sacred ritual and religion, but it also served a practical function, Since our predecessors regarded incarnation as a spiritual death, it was imperative to repair the severed umbilical cord with the subtle universe, reopen a connection, and establish an advantage over this dominant, and often suffocating, physical domain. And they went to great pains to achieve this connection. In northern New Mexico, it was customary for a tribesperson to climb the sacred mountain, Sabatai, to take part in a coming-of-age ceremony inside a sacred cave. 3 days were spent in glorious isolation, undertaking a vision quest to connect with the spirit of place, whereupon the individual was symbolically dismembered before being reconstituted and returned as a newborn individual. Despite its seemingly gruesome nature, the ordeal served a vital function to lessen the neophyte's tether to the physical world and allow their soul to become aware of its entrapment inside a limited vessel, thereby expanding its connection to the cosmos. With the ego relegated to the back seat and the soul in charge of the steering wheel, the individual became more aware of his or her purpose in life. The fringe benefits were tremendous. Expansion of latent psychic ability, the power of foresight, as well as the ability to shape the process of manifestation within certain boundaries. Some people developed the ability to heal others or to interact with the weather, as recent events in the Amazon will attest, when shamans were hired to end a long-standing drought. Torrential rain ensued within hours. On a mountain that is a potent magnetic hotspot in its own right, to say Batai is the eroded throat of a prehistoric volcano. The location of the sacred cave contains the exact natural ingredients that amplify the electrical current flowing through the human body, which in turn activates the body's meridians and stimulates the pineal gland, all the required ingredients for a heightened state of consciousness. For the Anasazi and Navajo, Tsay Bhatai was their portal. The Tewa people of central New Mexico still perform a similar ritual on the summit of Tsikumu, another sacred hill that just happens to coincide with the geomagnetic hotspot. They refer to the inherent energy as Powaha, which they say generates a portal into the other world. The exact spot looks about as remarkable as a lump of concrete marked by tumble-down stones, yet its power is palpable. Indeed, some mountains are more sacred than others for this very reason. When you hear A-type mountain climbers describing, in mystic vocabulary, a sudden experience in the process of ascent, listen to them. One of my favourite accounts is by Maurice Herzog during his climb of Annapurna, a holy mountain in Nepal. "I had the strangest and most vivid impressions, such as I had never before known in the mountains. All sense of exertion was gone, as though there was no longer any gravity. I had never seen such complete transparency, and I was living in a world of crystal. Sounds were indistinct, the atmosphere like cotton wool. An enormous gulf was between me and the world. This was a different universe. We were overstepping a boundary." Climbers of Cader Idris in Wales describe feelings of entering another reality, literally. Traditions highlight this specific mountain to be the main portal into Caer Anwan, the Gaelic otherworld. There is no end of anecdotes of strangers walking toward the tarn below its summit and feeling the presence of two large hounds, the black dogs who serve as guides while the soul fumbles in the dark and acclimates to its new and unsure domain. Like many of its kind, Cader Idris is a geomagnetic hotspot that coincides with a gravitational anomaly. generating the kind of energy that stimulates human passage from the known into the unknown. Most climbers are not consciously aware of this interaction, and it is possibly for the reason that a legend was devised as a mnemonic, reminding visitors of the supernatural potential in this mountain. It tells of a water dragon who was bound to the lake until Arfur worked his magic on the creature and set it loose. Those brave enough to spend the night will awaken as a poet, a madman, or a corpse. Deciphering this symbolic language, the dragon represents the meandering nature of energy, whose power is directed by the individual's own disposition, which in turn defines the outcome. The relationship between naturally occurring energy vortices and mountains explains why so many mountain shrines and temples were placed in architecturally irrational and, frankly, dangerous places. They represent the X that marks the spot, the portal as umbilical cord to a higher frequency. The holiest mountain in China, Huashan, is one such example. To reach the shrine near the summit, it is necessary to walk across a vertical chasm while holding onto a simple chain bolted to the cliff face, with nothing but air separating you from an unyielding surface 6,000 feet below. It is perhaps the most dangerous pilgrimage route on the planet, a one-way avenue for daredevils and madwomen attempting to defy death just to discover life. To deter casual visitors, the mountain was given the nickname Number One Steepest Mountain Under Heaven. Yet none of this deters those seeking immortality, or the plethora of medicinal plants and drugs to be found along the way. What drives tens of thousands of people to this portal is its long association with transcendence. The crazy climbers of Huashan are typical followers of one of the oldest spiritual practices in the Far East, Tao, specifically the development of Shun, whereby a person attains immortality by means of supernatural abilities developed as a result of contact with heavenly realms, either through spiritual self-cultivation or immersion with special places on the land. Tao first arrived in Japan around 8000 BC as Taiyi, the Way of the Gods, also referred to simply as the Way. It encompasses 17 teachings introduced by two gods after a global flood devastated the earth. The doctrine of Taiyi attempts to define the undefinable, the ebb and flow of energy that underlies the natural order of the universe and of reality itself. Although its qualities are ineffable, this subtle force is discernible by practitioners of mindfulness, who claim that proper relationship with the forces underpinning a portal awakens the great human within. Given such unparalleled benefits, it's not surprising that Taiyi became the foundation of Shinto, Japan's oldest religion, whose members, the Gentlemen of the Way, climb Mount Fujiyama as part of their ritual to enter the mountain and reach the paradisal state of the other world. This spiritual ideal was interpreted literally by the time it reached southern Britain. Barely tethered to the weather-beaten coast of Cornwall, the island of Tintagel has long been associated with vision quests and magic, and specifically with the exploits of Arth Gwr and Merdin, otherwise known as Arthur and Merlin. The island has a hollow interior and was once a source of high-quality gems and crystals. In essence, it is a giant geode. accesses via Merdin's Cave, a natural, dark passage that runs at sea level through the entire base of the island. The passage once served as the starting point of an initiation ritual, whereby the candidates spent the night huddling among slippery rocks, attacked from both sides by the loud thrashing from a feisty incoming tide, forcing them to face fear and, hopefully, control it. If successful, meaning they hadn't drowned, the candidate ascended into the belly of the island via a conduit in the roof. Settled inside this womb-like environment, he or she connected with the portal and journeyed to faraway worlds for several days before climbing up a natural tube resembling an umbilical cord, to emerge gratefully at the summit of Tintagel. At this point, the individual, still groggy from an out-of-body odyssey, was taken to an outcrop where a telluric current, science jargon for a pathway of Earth energy, flows toward the mainland and a church dedicated to Madryn, the mother of the Gaelic gods. The exact spot is marked by a carving on the bedrock in the shape of a footprint, into which the person placed their foot and was declared risen. It would take until the late 20th century before modern technology recognised the entire island as one giant geomagnetic anomaly, hence why it was chosen above all other, more suitable nearby locations. Such traditions are part and parcel of the process of initiation, which means to become conscious, and they are culturally shared throughout the world. Two prominent geomagnetic hotspots in Portugal happen to coincide with the region's two most sacred mountains, and its oldest and most concentrated thonic centres, Monsanto, literally Sacred Mountain, and Sintra, named for the Sumerian lunar goddess, Sin. Thus, if you honoured the moon, you were technically a sinner, or so the Catholic Church would have you believe. On these two mountains, you will come across wondrous and remote temples, shrines, and hermitages dedicated to isolation and the total absorption of the divine. There are hermit caves, dolmens, a group of standing stones supporting a capstone, even rock-cut graves that are too shallow for preserving a dead body, but very practical for temporary shamanic travel. When the energy hotspot remains unadulterated, a sacred mountain requires no human embellishment. Its portal is palpable, even to the casual traveller, particularly if its energy is enhanced over long periods of time by the devotion of practitioners in a spiritual community. Arunachala in India is a prime example. Like many of its kind, Arunachala is rich in traditions of interaction between otherworldly beings with humans, and as such, illustrates the very purpose of the portal as a place where ideas are exchanged between worlds. It is interesting to note that in the mystical traditions of Persia, Japan, and the lands of the Hopi, sacred mountains are seen as meeting places between heaven and earth. Skeptics might see nothing magical in this because, to them, a mountain is physically the closest point to the sky, in which case all mountains would be sacred, yet they are not. There is an important distinction insofar as these cultures describe the exact location of the sacred cave, shrine, or ritual centre as being connected to the sky by a luminous tube or hollow reed, along which the spirit of the initiate travels outward, and conversely, the energy of a spirit or a god descends. For the Hopi, this conduit is the Sipapu reed. For Persians, it is the reed of heaven. Perhaps the least known, and certainly most perceivable, sacred mountain portal is that of Kura Tawati.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?